Hello, and welcome to another edition of Tell Me About the Hard Part. I am your host, Attorney Siobhan Smith. As you know, on this podcast, we delve into some of the more challenging parts of ownership, business ownership, but also how our guests overcame those challenges and just different ways you can be successful in your business. And the reason I started this podcast, which I say on every episode, is it feels like entrepreneurship was and even continues to be glorified, but no one was really giving a glimpse into some of the less savory parts and really the hard work that goes into it. And today I have someone who has built a phenomenal practice. She's a client and a friend, so I'm happy to have her here, Dr. Janelle Animaleche, who is the owner of Children's Choice Pediatric Dentistry and Orthodontics. She is a graduate of Duke University and the University of North Carolina Schools of Dentistry and Public Health. She was named America's top pediatric dentist by Consumers Research Council. And in addition to her private practice, she is on the teaching faculty at Children's National Medical Center and Georgetown University Medical Center. She is the president of the D.C. American Academy of Pediatric Dentistry and a speaker for Colgate-Palmolive Oral Health Network. She is married to one of my dear friends. She is the mother to two beautiful children. She has two locations of her business. So as you can see from her bio, she does a lot. So thank you for being with us today, Janelle.
Thank you, Siobhan. Thanks for having me.
So one of the reasons I really was excited, there are a lot of reasons that I wanted to talk to you, but thinking about expansion, I know a lot of people are always interested in growing a business, and you have opened a second location. And also just about managing people, you as a dentist, you work with dentists, but some of your employees are non-professionals. So I felt like you have a lot of insight for folks. But I wanted to start talking about, you know, you decide to become a dentist, or pediatric dentist, why then the other decision to start your own business?
The decision to do that was actually based on wanting to create my own space. I was, at the time that I made, you know how you kind of think about, oh, I should do it, maybe I won't, maybe I will. And at the time that I decided to do it, it was based on a conversation that I'd had with someone I was working for. And basically, I wasn't able to make the decision because, you know, I wasn't the owner. And so I wanted to make those changes. There were ways that I thought, not that at that time where I was, that pediatric dentistry was being delivered inappropriately, but I thought there were, it could just be done a bit differently, and I had a vision for it. And so with no prior leadership experience and no prior business experience, I delved into it.
Okay. That's really interesting, and I think for a lot of people, that though the reason you gave, either people want freedom or they want to do things a certain way that they can't do kind of in the confines of being an employee. So when you decided to open your own practice, what did you say that you would do different than had already, is that, that was already kind of in the marketplace?
Well, I think that, you know, no one, especially the child in pediatric dentistry, they don't know if we've done a great filling or if we've done the right preparation for that tooth. Like, they don't know, right? They trust that when they're walking into our space that we're doing dental care to the standards of what we're required to do. So then from there, it's like the good old, you know, how do you make people feel? What do you want people to, what do you want to be known for? What did I want to be known for in the community? And who did I want to have an impact on? And so as I've always wanted to be a dentist. Since, I mean, you talk to my family from young kids. But when I thought about it, the other aspect that I really loved was social work. And in pediatric dentistry, I get to do both because, you know, I'm providing dental care, but I'm also, you know, on the Hill fighting for oral health policy, or, you know, I'm helping this kid navigate the college process and editing an essay. And so those are the things that beyond just the confines of my building, I've created a space that can serve the community in many facets.
Do you think you would have been able to fulfill all of those roles had you been an employee with someone else?
It's interesting you say that. I almost felt that next question coming. I did, actually. I used to. And it was when I was director of a nonprofit dental center in D.C. For a few years. And I did a lot of those things, community engagement. Mm-hmm. They gave me, because I was the specialist within the corporate setting, but I was the only specialist, I got a bit more freedom than other associates. And so I was able to do a lot. But still then, at that point, it came down to I couldn't hire and fire. I needed the ability. I could wear the hat, and I could wear the doctor in front of my name, but I also care about my persona. So that means the people that are with me have to reflect the culture that I want to portray and be the people that, if I'm out of the room and a parent asks a question, that they can answer that question quite eloquently and thorough and be thorough about it because I've taught them that. They have that in themselves, you know? So that was the difference then. Like, I almost got there as an employee, but I couldn't, I still didn't have the hire and fire ability. To then bring in people that reflected me.
Let's talk a little bit about, you use the word culture, and even when I look across various websites that like Yelp and your Facebook page, you have really amazing reviews, and not just one or two, you have like a lot of them. So a lot of people say a lot of good things about that. How did you go about creating a culture, kind of engineering an experience for the child and the parent that would then result on the back end of people being so willing to kind of say glowing things about your business? Because as a business owner, referrals, like literally every good client I get, not to disparage the people who come other ways, but referrals and what people say about you is really how you grow your business. So how were you able to really engineer that experience?
As a pediatric dentist, now it's a little bit easier that I have kids. I'm a mom. But before, I opened my space when I wasn't. And so I actually, as I was starting this space, I was taking the things that I heard, you know, from either working within my practices or that as I talked to other families I'd heard. And then from there, I formed a focus group. I formed a focus group of some families, not all friends. I think one friend now in the focus group and the rest were just parents of the practice, and they would give me sort of that feedback that, you know, I wanted to know in terms of, you know, tell me some of your good experiences and tell me some of your not good experiences, just to kind of understand where families are coming from. In terms of the culture, I wrote down literally words that would describe what I wanted people to say about my practice when they came in, meaning the parents, because I serve two audiences, so the parents and the kids, what I want them to say about us. And then kind of reverse engineer, well, how do we get there? And then not be fake. Because, I mean, yeah, I mean, we could have this, you know, extra play space or something like that where the kids are like, that is amazing. But we wanted them to really truly feel how we care. And that has come back to us right now because we have a lot of gadgets and doodads in the play area and toys and all these things. And we have to put all those things up right now because of COVID. And so now we're like, ooh, we have to rely on our awesome personalities. Because we don't have the toy or the playroom wow like we've had to put everything up. So at this point, it's coming back to remind me, see, like it's the people, again, that are going to be the culture people in our practice.
So you used you didn't say this, but you kind of implied this. And so mm-hmm. even, you know, when I do these podcasts, I keep notes of the words that I hear over and over again. And it's mm-hmm. amazing to me that a lot of them are the same, but I hear just a sense of intentionality that you were very intentional. Like it didn't just happen that people wrote you good reviews. You desired that. You kind of reverse engineer. This is what I want people to say about me. You formed a focus group, which is interesting. When I started my law practice, I actually just pulled a bunch of business owners I knew. Just people who mm-hmm. are friends, who own businesses. And I'm like, tell me about the time you worked with a lawyer. Tell me what you liked. Tell me what you didn't like. And it's amazing how many people don't even do that. Like, that is a huge step of just knowing what your audience wants, because it doesn't mm-hmm. matter if no one's buying what you're selling. So I hear mm-hmm. Some intentionality there. So part of that culture experience is obviously, you know, you cannot do this on your own. I mean, you could be in the dental practice by yourself, but you can't answer the phone. You can't do your marketing. So obviously you need people. And that's obviously grown over time, which we'll talk a little bit more about. But more specifically, I want to know, what did you think made a good employee kind of your first day in business after leaving the corporate environment, hiring your first employee, versus today where you've opened a new location, you have far more people work for you, you have professionals working for you. How has your view changed on what is a good employee?
Oh, wow. It's changed a lot. Believe it or not, when we started 6 years ago, the capital wasn't there to hire the most experienced person. So we had one employee who had a lot of experience. She was cross-trained. Myself, who was also answering phones, pretending it wasn't me. and then interns. We had six interns who were doing a gap year between undergrad and dental school. And we did almost our first year that way. But when we were looking at, as we were phasing out our interns and looking at hiring, initially I was like, I need someone, you know, who's had all of this experience, who's done it, you know, who's done it all, who knows how to do it, et cetera, et cetera. And it's true, I needed someone who had some experience, but as now we've gone from, you know, one full-time employee and six interns to 15 full-time employees, I need a lot more. So, I wanted that person who knew how to do it all and understood it all, because I didn't understand the inside of my practice. I knew how to do dentistry, mm-hmm. but I didn't understand, you know, the ins and outs of deductibles and insurance claims.
For
and
sure.
Things like that.
Yeah.
And so I thought I wanted someone like that, but more so because I didn't know how to. But that didn't cover up the fact that I still needed to learn how to. So that was a big learning experience for me, because I was like, oh, I have someone that knows how to do this. And then, you know, a year later, I find out that mm-hmm. they weren't doing it correctly, and I didn't know how to correct that. So I still had to learn the ins and outs of my business regardless. And now, as I look, we have a wide variety of employees. We have some seasoned ones. We have some who are entry level, and then some that are literally just starting. And the benefit of that is, for some positions, for any position now, and this is 6 years later, I feel like I can teach anyone anything, and that's because I know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so personality, totally, like the mindset and personality totally stand out in terms of that, because we have such a culture that we want to keep. And then, you know, everything else we map out for those that are newer in the practice and haven't had as many years of dentistry. We train, we teach, we send to courses, we put in place hopefully measures that they're able to grow. And then those that are more seasoned, then they have higher KPIs. One, for me to be able to check in and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to do, but also their measurements in terms of what their ability to do is higher, and we rank it by tiers. And so that focus from, you know, the one employee who I need to be able to do everything because I don't know particularly how to do it, to I need people that can deliver, are accountable, have a personality to wow the people that we work with, and really have an inner desire to do more, like to take their career further as far as they can.
So when you are leading, you know, you find these people who kind of fit this new criteria, what you're looking for, how do you lead in an organization when you are the owner, you work side by side with people, and some of the people you're leading are kind of highly educated professionals, and others are, you know, not as highly educated, just given the span of tasks that are necessary in a dental office. How have you learned to kind of lead with some thinking about some of those factors?
My initial answer is you give the task and support the things that the task needs to get done and then get out of the way. Because I still am, if you were to ask my employees, somewhat of a micromanager. And that's a big work in progress for me to get out of the way. Because when I've gotten out of the way, there are tremendous things that have happened that I was like, I didn't even know you could do that. How did you know?
I didn't even know that could be so wrong.
Right. I thought I was the only one who could do that. And so you know, knowing what levels of support are needed, holding people accountable, being clear in terms of expectations, because there are definitely a lot of times where I wanted something and then it comes to me and I'm like, what did you do? And it was because I didn't give clear instructions. So they did what they thought they were supposed to do or things of that sort. So communicating for the audience that I'm talking to, you know, we just this year hired an office manager. So I was, that mix was, probably shouldn't have been, like I shouldn't have been the visionary, the office manager, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Like right. that is just a lot. But it's also a lot to put in someone's hands, basically, a big chunk of your practice. And so I was scared too, because I was like, man, like if anything can go wrong at a certain point, it would be right there that it could really go wrong, or it could go right.
I mean, I think that's definitely an issue for a lot of people who kind of grow things from scratch. Is you figured out early on that you needed to learn pretty much how to do everything. And then once you do, it's finding, you know, it's trust, finding people you trust to carry out those functions the same way you would. And for me, sometimes I have to remind myself that things will not always be done the way that I would do them. I just want them done right. And right can't always be the way that I said it had to be done.
Yes.
There are a lot of right ways to do a thing. And I think that is the part that becomes challenging for people. So, you know, you built this thing. You mentioned you went kind of from one to two people, six interns, to a staff of 15. I know that those are spread against two locations. So I do want to talk about just kind of expansion. So you have one location. Right. You are learning the ropes. You're managing people. And you're doing well. Why not grow where you are? Why the decision to open up a new location and expand in that way?
We haven't been open a year in our D.C. location yet. We opened in June of 2019. And believe me, during these times, I've asked myself that question. And also because at the same exact time, we expanded our family to two. So the day after I gave birth, literally in the hospital, our contractor called after 18 months of waiting for permits and said, I have your permits. What do you want to do? And I was like, start building. And that may have been – it was a big step, And I honestly didn't realize how big of a step it was, because at that point then I absolutely needed someone that I could depend on to help oversee, because I couldn't be in two places at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the opportunity, the one of the biggest opportunities that we took in terms of expansion was because we could buy the space. And currently in our first space, we are renting. And when I look at the amount of rent that continues to go up every year,
right,
and we walk out of the space, we own nothing but the equipment inside. And I could, in a certain sense, but I couldn't pass it all along to, you know, my kids or things of that sort. So when we got the opportunity, and when I say we, because it's a big family decision. Like my first practice, I did a lot of decision making on my own. With this one, a lot of family conversations, because it affects a lot of people.
Right.
And the ability to then do that, own the space, have this space as something, as a potential investment, the opportunity to be the neighborhood pediatric dentist, because we're in a neighborhood instead of our first location, which is in sort of a shopping center. It was going to give me an opportunity to do even that a little differently. And so here we are. I'm still learning how to manage too. But that's how we got to the opportunity, and that's why I took the opportunity to do so.
Was there a point in time, I have a couple questions. Do you wish you'd have bought a building the first time, or you feel like leasing was the way to go the first time?
We tried. We didn't have the capital. We didn't have the capital at that time to do so. The first time I looked, and I guess I didn't have the capital because I was looking by myself at that time. And DC was uber expensive. And so this opportunity came more so because we'd had people that we'd already put the feelers out there. And we're like, we eventually want to buy. Just keep your eyes on the ground. Like, if something comes up, let us know. Don't forget about us. And so this kind of it came a bit of a surprise because it was not planned. The opportunity came. We saw the space, loved the space, and we're just like, just gonna do it.
I mean, and the fact that you were kind of already oriented that way, obviously opportunity doesn't always come when you want it to come, but when you're ready for it's important. So I just to give the viewers a timeline, I was looking at my case, because like I said, Janelle's a client, my case management system, and I'm pretty certain I have you in there by your maiden name, because when we started working together, you were not married yet. So in the course of, like, starting your practice, you got married, started your practice, had a kid, had another kid, opened another practice. So a lot of life has happened to you in
a
span of like 5 years or so. How has being a wife and a mother, which you weren't kind of the day you opened the first doors, how has that changed how you approach business?
It makes me compress my time. It makes me not want to waste time and not allow my team members to waste time. It really has taught me either, you know, I have to, and I haven't perfected the organized day yet, the perfect day yet, but I plan each day for how I like for it to go. And at least I'm constantly thinking about how to make that happen. I enjoy the flexibility to be able to write my kids' school play or teacher activity into my calendar and say, you know what, block me out from, especially now that some days I'm in the D.C. office, you know, block me out for my lunch. I'm going to go run over to the school for 30 minutes, and I'll be back for my patient at 2 o'clock. And I really enjoy that, the ability to be able to do that. But it's also, as a boss, made me think more about how I allow my employees to do the same and have some of that flexibility too, because we're an all-woman team. and 3/4 of us have kids. So I realized that some of the things that I want to do for my kids and my family, they also want to do too. And granted, they can't do everything, but to allow that flexibility and think about that as we're planning things in our future.
Got it. Just we'll wind down with just a couple more questions. I will be remiss. Obviously, we are, you know, recording this on May, the end of May. D.C. is on the verge of opening up in a couple days after Corona. I know you've had to close down your dental practice. Tell me how you kind of handled this whole kind of craziness we've been dealing with, and what are you proud of? So, you know, what are you proud of that you've been able to kind of withstand, even though you've had to kind of shut your door down for a couple months?
Yeah. So we closed on March 16th, and we are still closed. We open June 8th. Mm-hmm. And I would say the step up that I did as a leader in our space, because when it happened and when it was happening, like, clearly no one knew what to do. And the one thing I knew, because our team was just coming back from a really great conference retreat. We were pumped up. We were motivated. I had new team members that we just, you know, onboarded and trained. And I was like, the one thing I know is I can't let this momentum die, or it's going to be a big deal. Like, we're going to have a hard time coming back to the office. So, you know, 24 hours, maybe 48 hours, I put together a 3-phase plan for my office. And at that time, we knew unemployment, and no one was clear about how to apply and when they were going to get their money, and all these things were happening. So we committed to paying our employees for 4 weeks, and we trained virtually for those first 4 weeks, which was our initial phase one. And we did virtual training. We trained anything that I was like, you know what, this really irks me that we, you know, my team member needs to know this, or we hadn't had the time to talk about this, so we need to do scripting. Any of those things, like, I wrote them all out, and each day we tackled an issue. And that really, I think, like, the team, like, for that time, the team really never detached from each other. And we'd have morning jams, and we'd send each other care packages in the mail, and we just try to make it as normal as possible.
Yeah.
And it was funny because, like, my kids would be on the – I'd be on one end of the table. They'd be sitting, like, right beside me, right outside of the Zoom, like, the little box. And it's just how we were – what we were doing for that time. And so, you know, during that time, we've done – over 65 hours of training. I have two team members that have gotten new certifications, and we were answering calls from home. I put together, we didn't do virtual consults prior, and I put together a portal where our patients could virtually consult with us. And I mean, it was just kind of, it allowed, I'm proud of the fact that it allowed me to let my creativity just go wild. Because at that point I could make up whatever. There was no protocol. And so I'm definitely proud of the fact that office-wise we were able to find a common ground and push forward. And not to say that it was all roses and enjoyable times during that time, because we as team members and our families have gone through a lot, but we were able to maintain that culture throughout this time, and now in a week and a half we're going back. So I'm really proud of that.
Excellent. So final question, tell me about the hard part of running Children's Choice.
Time away from family is one of the hardest parts. And I get, you know, I think it's a misconception that, you know, you own, so you can do whatever you want. If you're not in there, you're not getting paid. And that's a, you know, if you take vacation, you may not be getting paid, which is the impetus to have, you know, other streams of income, right? But time away, putting my kids to bed, and then 10 o'clock at night, headed back out to the office to finish up work for the next day or something like that. Those things become taxing after a while. And I would say the other thing is maybe not always having employees who always, because they're not the owners, have an ownership state of mind. Like, they don't understand. Yeah. They just see, you know, I'm Dr. Animalecki. I must be making millions. And it's like, you know, overhead is through the roof. And especially coming back from COVID, like, our overhead has increased 7%. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how are we going to, what are we going to do? And so just, you know, having those things and trying to at times, and it's been a big lesson learned about vulnerability, try to keep a faith when you don't know really what's going to happen.
Wow. Well, what's the best part?
My kids running down the hall and thinking that the D.C. practice is my daughter's and the Maryland practice is my son's, because Maryland was first.
I love it.
So he literally asked me, you know, are we going to Amra's practice or are we going to my practice?
I love that. They have ownership. I love it.
That is the perfect word. Like, they take pride in it. And, you know, as we're trying to reflect as adults on these kids, like, this is a huge factor. That we have a community that supports us, and I have a team that is supportive. All of those things, you know, matter. And the ability to kind of dream, I can decorate and do things within the practice that, you know, my husband would be like, absolutely not at home. You know, Charles. So I'm like, I'm just going to come to the office and do this. So that freedom to dream and really have something as part of a legacy for my kids and for other kids that aspire to be in the seat.
Excellent. Well, tell people how they can find you, how they can come to the practice. If you have kids and you are in the DMV area, there's no reason you should not be taking your kids to see her for their dentistry. But tell people how they can contact you.
We are in Northeast D.C. in Michigan Park and in New Carrollton, Maryland. Our website is mychildrenschoicedental.com. You can find us on IG at Children's Choice Dental or Facebook as My Children's Choice. And of course, you can always contact us through any of those mediums. And on our online portal, you can book an appointment directly with us. So we are a social practice. We tend to be in the community quite a bit. And it's one of the things that I really enjoy. Therefore, it really helps us make an impact, I think, outside of our walls.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. Thank you for listening on Tell Me About the Hard Part. You can find me on Instagram at Siobhan J. Smith. You can find me on Twitter at the SJS Law Firm. If you are listening to this podcast, please share it. Please use the hashtag Tell Me About the Hard Part and listen in next time. Thank you.
Thanks, Siobhan.